Billy Epler is finally making sure that some quality pitching is making its way to Anaheim. Unfortunately, he's now the general manager of the Mets. This is Locked On MLB.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. As you can tell from the lower third that's just popping up right now on YouTube, you can feel free to call me Sully. Thanks for making Locked On MLB your first listen. As we're available on all your free podcasting catchers, we're also available here on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And if you have a smart device, be sure to tell it to play Podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Bets, which is your one-stop go-to place for all your gambling needs. It's hosted by your boy Q, with Lee Sterling giving his expert analysis. As I hinted on the teaser, there's a lot of free agency movement and pitcher movement and everything like that that's going on right now. And there's pitchers heading from the Mets to the, well, I keep wanting to call them the California Angels because that's just how I think of them. Well, they've already acquired, the Angels have already acquired Noah Syndergaard. Now, as I said before, it's a quality, move for the Angels to bring in a pitcher like Syndergaard, who, when healthy, is an elite pitcher. That when healthy part of it is kind of the sticky issue, and a non-spider tack sticky issue, mind you. But the fact of the matter is that it's a high reward, low risk move bringing in Syndergaard. Well, the other day, they brought in another former Met, and this one made a lot of Met fans, I scratched my nose, a little angry because it's Aaron Loop. Now, Aaron Loop is not a spring chicken. He's, 33-year-old pitcher, but he had a wonderful year for the Mets in their bullpen as he allowed just six earned runs in 56 and two-thirds innings, finishing with a 0.95 ERA, striking out 57 batters, more than a batter an inning, and a strikeout to walk ratio, easy for you to say, of 57 strikeouts to 16 walks. Only let up one home run all year long, and was one of the mainstays of the Mets bullpen. He's gone. He's gone. Toodaloo. And now it's looking more and more like Marcus Stroman, who had a fine year for the Mets, gave the Mets 179 innings, led the league in starts with 33, and had another good solid strikeout to walk ratio, good solid earned run average, 3.01, an ERA plus of 133 in his comeback season after sitting out the 2020 season, opting out for COVID reasons. There's now, it looks like he may be heading to the Angels as well. So the Angels are basically trying to become the Mets. Just as Billy Epler arrives in Metland and seeing the pitchers scatter off to Southern California, because that's what happens when Billy Epler takes over your team. I have no idea what's going to happen with the Mets. It's so surreal to think that the World Series champion came out of the National League East, and for a giant chunk of the season, the Mets were in first place in the National League East. And not only did they not win it, they finished sub 500, and everything came apart. There's a rumor that Buck Showalter will become the new manager of the Mets. I'm for that. Buck is a fine manager. He's been a Johnny Appleseed of playoff appearances. Teams he goes to tends to get to the postseason. They tend to go to the World Series or win it once he leaves, although it hasn't happened in Baltimore yet. You know, Buck Showalter is one of those managers like Bob Melvin, like Dusty Baker, where he's had tremendous success wherever he's gone, just as hasn't had that World Series ring yet. You know, and so I think that might be interesting. Imagine if, you know, if the World Series was between, let's just say, and this is a real possibility, the World Series next year is between the Astros and the San Diego Padres, you would have two managers in charge of it who just need a World Series title to make their Hall of Fame candidacy seem solid with Bob Melvin and Dusty Baker. Well, Showalter could be one of those. You know, it still drives me batty that Bruce Bochy's lieutenants, Roberto Kelly, Hensley Mullins, and Ron Wotus, aren't being given managerial jobs. And Woodward of Texas is given an extension despite, you know, what, yeah, the Rangers aren't bad because of him, but, you know, they're really good quality managerial candidates out there. We'll see. You know, it's interesting, you know, Showalter's name pops up. It always pops up. You know, if the Mets just want to go all in and say, let's just see what happens and, you know, guarantee that there's at least going to be conversation, they could bring in Guillen. I like the idea of Mike Schilt, you know, who won the manager of the year in 2019, who got a vote for manager. There was one of the top three finalists last year taking over the Mets. You know, whether or not you like his style or not, you know, the Cardinals were a lot better under him than they were under Matheny. So, but it's interesting that there is this exodus of pitchers from the Mets to California, which is good in one sense for the Angels. Look, do I think that they're getting the epitome of health in Stroman and Syndergaard and a 34-year-old Loop? No. But what they are doing is they are doing what they should have been doing a long time ago, is just bringing in as many pitchers as you can. They have the AL MVP and Mike Trout on this team. And Trout is going to be back. You know, I mean, I wonder if he would have rushed back if there was any reason to, but there's no reason to. Comes back, you know, he's been a very durable player up until last year. And he was actually having the best season of his career, which is saying something. So you'll have a healthy and angry Mike Trout. You'll have Shohei Ohtani and at least two other pitchers. Now, here's the deal. I think the Angels should go after Scherzer. I think they should be kicking the tires on the teams like the A's or teams like the Reds, who might be trading away some of their pitchers, who might be going into a rebuild mode. Because if you get a really good starting pitcher, like an all-star caliber starting pitcher, then suddenly the acquisition of Syndergaard and Loop and possibly Stroman become depth as opposed to what you're banking on. If you, let's say, you acquire one really good starting pitcher and Stroman and Syndergaard and you have Ohtani. I mean, I'm not saying that's the 1995 Braves, but I am saying that that might be good enough to win 90-some-odd games, especially if Ohtani continues to hit home runs, some of their young players start to develop a little better, and Trout is back. And, you know, I mentioned yesterday, I focused on Clint Frazier. I said there were two players on the Yankees that they basically designated for assignment. You know, they've dealt away Tyler Wade already, the Yankees, and I believe he went to the Angels. And Rougned Odor is exactly the type of player who probably would have a chip on his shoulder and want to prove that he's for real still. It's beneficial for baseball to have the Angels be good. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a resident of Southern California and soon to be a graduate of California State University Fullerton. It's because the best player in baseball needs to be on the postseason stage. And the most intriguing player in baseball, Ohtani, also needs to be. These are the types of players who you need to see on your TV when it comes to October or whatever you use. And sometimes it gets confusing what devices you use to watch. But they need to see the Angels there because you need those marquee players on those screens. multiple screens. You know what I'm talking about. You sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live. You got another one that lets you stream your favorite shows. Then you're watching sports highlights on the phone. You got your neighbor's best friends log in for the good stuff. Look, I want to tell you there's an easier way to get all that entertainment that you love without the hassle. And finally get a great way to get your television together. It's called DirecTV Stream. It brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, shows, all in one place. Look it, that means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract, so get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device is required, and content varies by package. And if you get a good quality pitching staff around the Angels, they're going to be a surefire bet that they will be an exciting team all year. And if you're going to make any bets, go to Bet Online. It's your number one spot for all the sports action all year long. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. It's not just baseball. You got football. You got pro and college hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, and your favorite Las Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online. We're stuffed with deals this Thanksgiving. You know, the Giants are wasting no time. There was a period where it looked like, oh, I wonder how many of our pitchers we have signed up for the year. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're going right to it. They want to get right back on the field. They want to show their 107-win season wasn't a fluke. They want to do a little more than getting a check swing off of Max Scherzer. And so, Webb is back. Wood is back. Cobb may be coming, and Anthony DeSclafani has re-signed. And it's a little bit of a tidal wave, and there's a reason for this flurry of activity. There's usually not this flurry of activity. Obviously, we know the flurry of activity. It is right now the 23rd day of November 2021, as I'm recording this. In roughly seven days, will be the deadline for a lockout. Now, if you're going to have a lockout, have it when the season's not going on. If you're going to have a lockout and a stare down, have it be between December 1st and spring training. Okay? If you're going to have a lockout, don't have it disturb spring training. Okay? Figure it out. Figure it all out. I know there's a lot to figure out. There's a lot of complicated things to figure out. Figure it out. But there is a sense of urgency to start filling some holes up. In case there's a prolonged lockout, or if the lockout like ends like, it's the second week of March, lockout's over, spring training's begin. Oh God, what are we gonna do? I like having this artificial deadline. You know, a lot of these things are artificial. Trade deadlines, waivers. This isn't about legality. This is about the rules that have been set up in the collective bargaining agreement. And so if a artificial barrier is causing a flurry of baseball moves before Thanksgiving and having people still talk about baseball and thinking about who's going to be on the team, who's going to be on the team. First of all, this is really smart to do if you're trying to sell season tickets and maybe have season tickets be a nice holiday present, Christmas present, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. Hey, look at that. I got Marlins tickets. Well, those Marlins tickets are going to be a lot more valuable and a lot more fun to have in your stocking this December if you know that they've gone out and made some big moves. Giants doing this are telling their fans, hey, look it. By McCovey Cove and China Basin next year, we're going out there, we're going to try to do it again. And we're doing so with pitching. We're doing so to make sure that we're going to have a quality product on the field. And those players who you saw in 2021? I almost said 2017. And those players we saw in 2021, we're getting the band back together, especially because they can't hang their hat on Buster Posey anymore. So they brought back Belt, they brought back Wood. They brought back Disclafani. Looks like they're going to be getting Cobb. You know, they're going to have a good pitching staff. They're going to have some decent bats. They got one more big hitter in there. Boom. They're going to be back in it because the NL West is going to be stacked. You know, the Padres have one of the best managers in baseball and two generational talents and some decent pitching. The Dodgers are on a roll. And there's some talent in Colorado. There's some talent in Arizona. Those aren't necessarily pushover teams, despite their records. So, you know, the Giants are putting this team where they're saying, hey, look it, come lockout. If they're locked in like the Purge, they know they've got a decent pitching staff around them. You know, we're talking about work stoppages and collective bargaining agreements like we're possibly staring in the face. One of the things that caused a lot of the consternation and the, you know, the first, you know, heavy duty work stoppages, which were in the 70s at first in 72, and then there was the big one in 81. That was all based upon free agency compensation. If a team loses a free agent, how are they going to be compensated? And the owners, the players didn't want any. It's like, hey, I just went to a new job. Why do you get to be compensated? And there was all this big to-do, and they had all these, you know, whether it was a draft pick or they get to select another player. That's what there used to be a compensation draft where the players you were did not protect on your, what's on your 25-man or 40-man roster, I don't remember the exact number, anyone not, there's a draft that you could have that you could select players from that were unprotected from rosters. That's what happened when Tom Seaver went back to the Mets in 1983 and thought, okay, I'm back with the Mets and I'm going to finish my career with the Mets. And the Mets were building up a great new team with Darryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden and everything like that. And Seaver was going to be part of that team. And the White Sox selected Tom Seaver. And instead of seeing Tom Seaver be part of that great team, we got to see him wearing those weird White Sox uniforms. And I think that scared people away. That was one of the things that caused the end of that. There were all sorts of crazy things, and they led to strikes, or they led to work stoppages. There's one artificial thing that I kind of wouldn't mind seeing again. It didn't work in the 70s, but that was because free agency was brand new and no one knew what the hell they were doing. It's an artificial thing, but they had what was called the free agency reentry draft, which was a draft. The players could declare their free agency, boom. Off they went to free agency, bam. And then teams could, you could draft who you want to sign as a free agent. But multiple teams could draft the same player. You know, the Yankees and the Montreal Expos and one other team, I can't remember what it was, drafted Reggie Jackson when he was a free agent after his one season in Baltimore. And so what that meant was these teams were putting their flags in the sand saying, we want to try to sign this player. We want to try to sign that player. And then all of a sudden, okay, these are the teams that are going to negotiate with this player. And then you could potentially have either a bidding war or it turns into a sort of, it would be a way for a franchise to show their fans, we're trying to get better. Look, we drafted this guy. He just didn't want to sign with us. And I would love to see that. And each team be required to use like three picks. Each team be like a player can only be drafted by what, three organizations, but each team has to use their three picks. Whether or not they sign everyone, that's a different issue. But that way you see the franchise saying like, well, look, we drafted Marcus Stroman. We drafted Marcus Semien. You don't have to always draft someone named Marcus. But you understand what I'm saying. It's an artificial way of building up competition and everything, but it's all artificial. The draft is artificial. Free agency is artificial. It's all part of it. And it may create a bit of a spectacle. Something to think about as we enter this year facing another work stoppage. I know the players wouldn't go for it. Probably the owners wouldn't go for it. Maybe that's a unifying thing. They both would hate it. Sometimes having a unified hate could be something fun. But do you know what? Just as someone observing it, and for fan bases to say, are you trying? Yeah, we tried. Maybe that's all you need sometimes. I want to wrap up today's show by doing, sadly, COVID took another victim, and it was Doug Jones. And Doug Jones was only 64 years old when he died the other day. And he was a pitcher who was, man, you know, he was an unusual story in baseball. He was a late bloomer who became, say it with me, a five-time All-Star. Five-time All-Star. And he was someone whose career, he pitched his first game in 1982. He pitched his final game in 2000. And he was part of those entertaining, if not winning, teams in Cleveland, where they had the likes of Joe Carter and Corey Snyder and Julio Franco and Mel Hall. They had a ton of great hitters and not a lot of great pitchers. Greg Swindell had a couple of decent years. Tom Candiotti had a couple of decent years. But they never clicked. But they found this weird diamond in the rough in the 1988 season of this journeyman who bounced around between the Brewers and the Indians and played in the minors, played in the majors. And in 1988, after years of trying all different pitchers in the closer role, they gave it to this soft-tossing guy, not a strikeout guy, not a blazing fastball, a guy with a changeup, junk ball pitcher, at age 31, around the time where most journeyman relievers are thinking, maybe I should think of coaching, he became an All-Star, and became an All-Star in 1988, 1989, and 1990 as the closer for the Cleveland Indians, piling up saves with a good ERA. And then he wound up going to Houston in 1992, where he made the All-Star team there and finished the most games in the National League in 1992, had a sub-2 ERA. And then after another bad year in Houston, he found himself in Philadelphia in the strike year of 1994. And guess what he did there? He made the All-Star team again. And he wound up back, he bounced around a little bit, from team to team. And when the Indians were finally good, he made a cameo with the Indians in 1998 and finally got to play in the postseason in that year where they wound up losing the National League Championship Series to the Yankees, and then found himself in Oakland and finished his career with a very good Oakland A's team. And I love careers like this. It's an under-the-radar career. It's probably one you didn't notice. But as I said, he played 16-plus years in the major leagues, five times making the All-Star with three different teams. Three times in the American League with the Indians, once with the Astros, once with the Phillies. And you think about a career that really stretched just two different worlds. His first game that he ever played, for his major league debut, was on April 9th, 1982. Okay? 82. And he was in a team, he was pitching for the Brewers. On that team included Paul Molitor, Cecil Cooper, Ben Ogilvie, Gorman Thomas, Robin Yount, Jim Gantner, those classic Brewers players. And he was facing a Blue Jays team with the likes of Alfredo Griffin and Willie Upshaw and John Mayberry, Jesse Barfield, the late Damasio Garcia. The batters that he faced his big league debut were Tony Johnson, who I don't remember, Lloyd Mosby, and Willie Upshaw. That was the first game he ever played in 1982. The final game he ever played was in the 2000 Division Series at Yankee Stadium, where he pitched for the Oakland A's. And he faced Glenn Allen Hill, Luis Polonia, Tino Martinez, and Scott Brosius. And those are two wildly different eras of baseball. That this guy with a great walrus mustache, apparently a very gentle, good man, who had a career that most people, when you're a career minor leaguer and you come back up at age 31, you're thinking, well, maybe I'll squeeze a year, maybe two. And he said, no, I'm going to squeeze a decade and a half out. And he kept pitching and pitching and pitching. And when needed, he was an effective reliever and sometimes was an elite one. We lost him. But baseball is littered with stories like that and careers like that of people who you're not expecting to make it, who do. And it's hard to think of an example better than Doug Jones, of someone who persevered, of someone who was the definition of an anonymous journeyman who became, say it with me, a five-time All-Star. Rest in peace, Doug Jones. You're going to be missed. But you're not going to miss this podcast because we're going to be on another episode tomorrow and on Thanksgiving and on Friday. So thank you once again for making us your first listen. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. And your second listen should be Locked On Bets, your one-stop shop for all your gambling needs, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis from Lee Sterling. This has been Locked On MLB for the 23rd day of November 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.